Rishus Marina Rav Shlita. First of all, a very hearty mazel tov again to Nathan Mora, who laid tefillin today for the first time. And it's wonderful that you're with us. It's a great honor that you're part of our Shia. And it's fascinating to see all ages here, young and not so young. Perhaps at the end, for the benefit of the children who are here, we will give a few questions to ask at Seder night. I once knew a very conscientious man of a German background who used to tell me that he would not sell his chometz for Pesach. He said, "I don't make compromises with HaKadosh Baruch Hu." He wouldn't say, he would either eat up his chometz or he'd get rid of it. He wouldn't sell. And fortunately, he made a compromise with me. He allowed me to marry his daughter. He wouldn't. On Tanis B'chayim Erev Pesach, he would fast. He didn't fancy this idea of making a siyum. He said it's cheating. But we have sources for it, but that's the way he felt. Anyway, I didn't bother arguing with him about it. But the question is, when we're selling chometz and certain other things we're also doing, alright, we could talk about the siyum on Erev Pesach for the B'chayim. There is such a thing in halacha called ha'aromo, and ha'aromo, not so easy to define, and Henry quite rightly asked me to give some sort of alternative definition or title. Some call it legal fiction, some call it legal loophole, or do we call it some sort of trick, some sort of heta? You get these expressions like, "Oh well, it's all right on paper." And Gershon told me about a non-Jewish colleague of his who told him that he had been a participant of being the one buying chometz of a certain community in Golders Green. And he said to Gershon, "Well, it was really just a big joke." And he said, "It's not really a sale, is it?" Laughing. And so that begs the question, as if the kavona, the intention of the Gentile was not correct, could it have been a valid sale? And to lend justification to my gracious father-in-law, Zichrono Livracha, the Vilna Gaon actually discouraged selling chometz gomor. Or he said that if you sell it, don't buy it back. Otherwise it might be a display of insincerity. Rav Chaim Volozhin, he would not eat chometz which had been sold and bought back. He was worried that the kavanah of the parties had not been sufficient. And the Machasis HaShekel actually writes, "Ein data shall akum liknos," that the non-Jew, the Gentile who is buying, he hasn't really got the right intention in the kinyan which is taking place. And if one is doing it, okay, do it as a one-off, but regularly, every single year. Rav Amram Gon said, don't do it regularly, every single year. And there is an expression by the Aleph Chloch Shlomo in Simon Reish Chav Tes. He says, "Hetzer hatzole b'saro mikach dochak godal." This is a hetzer which is very iffy, suspended by a thread. So the question is the sale of your chometz legal? Can we rely on it? Or you'll say to me, "Look, the rabbi does it. I put my hands in the rabbi's hand. If the rabbi says it's all right, then it must be okay. I don't have to worry about it. That's what we pay him for." Okay, but apart from putting our trust in Rav Kol Shalita, who makes sure, actually, that the guy knows exactly what's going on, and he meets him at least a week beforehand, and he explains to him the procedure, and gets him to appreciate the procedure that it's all done kosher. Nevertheless, there are these questions. Is it a trick? Or do we say that it's a legal loophole? Or do we call it like tax avoidance, where the Chancellor of the Exchequer said a year ago, it's legal but it's morally repugnant? Do we put it in that category? How sincere is it? And the Tosefta, which writes about selling chometz, seems to imply that it's something only occasional. What's the Tosefta? He says there are two people on a boat. One is a Jew and one is a Gentile. And the Jew says to him, "Listen, Pesach is approaching. I need to get rid of my chometz. Will you buy it off me?" And that's the source for selling chometz. But there is a girsa which says, Ubilvad shelo yarim, providing that one does not cheat. Yarim means from haromo. It provided it's not a haromo. And the Beis Yosef says, I can't think of a greater haromo than this, that you sell for 10 days and then you buy it back. Surely that is a haromo. So the Beis Yosef says, well, it means that there should be no conditions. You can't do a matana amanos lachse or mechira amanos lachse. I give it to you on the condition that you give it back. You can't do that. So we do hear stories of occasionally where the Gentile turns up in the middle of Pesach on a kibbutz in Israel or somewhere and he says, right, where's my chametz? And he goes and he helps himself to it. But the question of haroma is wider. We're not going to be able to go into the whole subject in detail, but we do find haroma in halacha in other things. For example, in Erev Tavshilin, there is a din that if you forgot to do before Yom Tov, which leads into Shabbos, your Erev Tavshilin, you can be makne your flour to others, you can give it as a present to somebody else, and they can bake with it, and then you can eat from that. That's called a haroma, haroma din drabona, and it's mutter. Or if you haven't totaled your kalim, your new kalim, in a mikveh, and it's Shabbos or Yom Tov, when you don't do tevilah, you can, according to certain opinions, makneh the kalim to a Gentile, and then borrow them back and use them. That's a haroma. It's a legal device, you might say, as the lawyers would use that terminology. So what is the position with mechiras chometz? I mean, some people, they sell their house with their chometz. They're going on holiday, they don't want to do bedikas chometz, and there's a clause in their house insurance that if you sell your house, you have to notify the insurance company. Do they really notify the insurance company? And then there are countries when you sell something, you have to pay a sales tax. I don't think there's VAT on food in this country, but in America there is. Are these people paying the tax according to the law of the state? And there is perhaps the wrong attitude when in certain shuls, the gabba gets up on the last day of Pesach, and he says, will people please not use their chometz until after 10 p.m. when the rabbi has met the caretaker. And this caretaker, I mean, the one who usually buys the chometz from the rabbi, what sort of wage is he on? These caretakers are not exactly on a living wage, are they? Can they afford to buy this chometz which is being sold to them? I mean, it's not just a few things in your pantry, in your kitchen. You might be a dealer in whiskey and you have a whiskey warehouse and your stock is worth hundreds of thousands of pounds. And you're going to the rabbi and you're saying to him, please sell this for me. And this caretaker who's buying it, he can't afford more than a couple of pints in the pub. So how is it that if he can't afford these crates of whiskey, you know, is this really a valid sale? And the Madonis Shmuel in his Sefer Halacha on Hilchos Pesach actually suggests that this is divrei sechok lechisul. This is a laughing stock. This is ridiculous. You can't suggest that there is a valid sale going on when the fellow might not have the kavana, when the fellow hasn't got the money to buy it. You know, is mechiras chometz really as genuine as our rabbis are making out? The Rambam brings down the Tosefta. He says it's perfectly valid to sell your chometz, and he says in Perek Dalet Halachavov, he brings the Tosefta about the two who are on the ship, and one sells to the other. And Haroma is, of course, a subject which comes up. But the Beis Yosef says, provided there are no preconditions. The Ritva, though, also, he says it shouldn't be a regular thing, otherwise it becomes just like a pikodon. But we do know from the Mishnah, in Perek Kol Shor, the second chapter of Pesachim, that as long as you are allowed to eat your chometz, you can have hanor from it. Kol Shor Shemuta Lechel, Muta Lahachil, you can feed your animals. And there's a question about what hour are we talking about, that we won't go into the Gemara, but one of the phrases used in the Mishnah is Umochro Lenochri, and you may sell your chometz to the Nochri. Now there's an argument there between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and the Beis Shammai says, okay, you don't really sell unless you know that the Gentile will eat it up before Pesach, and then it doesn't exist in the world anymore. But Beis Hillel's not worried, because on tonight you sell your chometz to the Gentile and he can eat it whenever he wants. So there's a very famous Acharon called the Bechor Shar, and in his Tumah Shar he writes about a question relating to somebody who rears cattle for breeding purposes. He likes to fatten them up. So what does he do? He doesn't want to, of course, own them on Pesach, because the way of fattening them up is by feeding them with chometz. So what does he do? He sells his animals to the Gentile. And the Gentile is feeding these cows with chometz on Pesach. And after Pesach, he buys back his cow, those cows. And, of course, they're nice and fat. And he carries on breeding them for eventual sale. So he says, this can't be right. The farmer who's breeding this cattle, or to use our own expression, he's trying to have his cake and eat it. If he is selling his animals, but he's sitting back on Pesach thinking gladly, they're being fed well and they're fattened up and I'll do well about this after Pesach. Is this really right? So he says, well, it is a haroma. And he says it's haroma on a daraisa. And he doesn't like the idea. Nisa min haTorah. He quotes the Gemara of Shabbos Kuf Lamates. He says haroma is allowed on dinim drabonon, where he gives examples. Like Rav Huna talks about where you may not close a barrel on Yom Tov. So what does this person do? He happens to have a clove of garlic in his hand and he puts it on this hole in the barrel saying, I'm just putting away my garlic. And he just so happens to put it on that hole. So he says that's a haroma. Haroma d'rabbanon, which the Gemara says is okay. Or there's another example where Chazal said you don't ride on a boat on Yom Tov, and he's got fruit of his lying on this boat. So he goes onto the boat and he says, I'm just looking after my fruit. And he falls asleep next to it, and it just so happens that the boat then sails to the other side of the river, the ferry. He says, I'm just looking after my fruits, I'm not going anywhere. That's called a haroma. That's like a legal fiction. And it's on a din d'rabbanon. So he says, the Gemara says that's okay. But a haroma on a daraisa, he says, when it comes to bittul chometz, you're doing kol chamira v'chamira. You're saying a declaration. I declare all my chometz odorless. And therefore, you've already done your daraisa. Says the Bechor Shar, since I've already complied with my daraisa, with min haTorah, I've got rid of my chometz. Then he says, all I'm really doing is overriding a din d'rabbanon, because the rabbi said, don't have chometz in your possession, because you might come to forget. In the middle of the night, you're half asleep, and you come downstairs, and there's this delicious cream bun from Parkway, so you eat it without thinking. I mean, it's kosher the whole year round, so it's more easy to forget when it comes to Pesach. So in order to get rid of your chometz, that's a din d'rabbanon after you've done your kol chamira. So he says to override a din d'rabbanon, haroma d'raisa, not okay, but haroma d'rabbanon okay. That's the Bechor Shar.
Surely they're on two different...
Well, I'm coming to that. If there are problems with the Bechor Shar, which are identified by other Acharonim, in fact, there's an inherent contradiction. It's true, you might sell some and keep back some, and what you keep back, you're not selling, and therefore it's a daraisa. But there's another issue. When does your bittul take place, and when does your sale take place? If you do your bittul in the way that the Bechor Shar seems to be talking, I've done my kol chamira, and then afterwards you go to the rabbi and you do your sale, that can't be a sincere sale, because you've done a bittul. If you've done a bittul to overcome the daraisa, and then afterwards you're doing a sale, you've done a giloy das that your bittul was no good. Because if you go off and sell your chometz after you've done your kol chamira, then your whole kol chamira was invalid. If you do a mechira the other way around, and then you do a bittul, then it's on a daraisa, because you haven't yet done your kol chamira. So the Shvilei David brings out this contradiction from the Tuah Shah and says, it just can't be right this way. And he looks at it in a different way. He says it's a bit like a land purchase where there's a delayed action. So that when, by the time the shtar is finalized, the two go hand in hand. But there are still problems with that. The Shilile Eish says, I prefer to rely on the run. There's a chiddush of the run at the beginning of the Pesachim, which says that really what the Torah does is it's confiscating from you. your chometz. It becomes ownerless anyway, that your chometz becomes hefker anyway, because since there is an isser of chometz, it is confiscated from you, but then it is in a way returned to you to enable you to do your bittul ba'almor, to do your mechira. But mir ikad hadin min haTorah, your chometz becomes ownerless because it's confiscated. So he says the mechira and the bittul complement each other. Both are simply a giloy das that I want it out. I don't want my chometz. This is also not straightforward, and it's a bit longish. Comes along the Nesivus in his Sefer Mekor Chayim, and he says, you can sell your chometz, and you do a bittul, and there's no haroma at all, because it's on a daraisa. First you do your sale of your chometz, and whatever chometz you have left, you are doing a bittul, you're saying your kol chamira, and it's haroma on a daraisa. And he says, it doesn't matter if you call it haroma. There's no question that we said that if we are no conditions like the Beis Yosef said, it's not a legal fiction. It's a proper valid sale. And it can be for a daraisa. He quotes the Mishnah of Maaseh Sheni in Perek Dalad, Mishnah Dalad, where you can do haroma on a daraisa, but that's another subject. The Chasam Sofer comes along on this, and he says there is no question about the fact that the sale of your chometz is perfectly valid. He says in Aruch Chaim Siman Samach Beis, and also in Siman Kuf Yud Gimel, the sale has to be first, before the bittul. And he says it's a heter gomor b'li shum pikpuk. There is no doubt about the validity of this sale. But the problem is that if you do the bittul first and then the sale, then you're really in a right mess. You've got yourself in a complete twist, because then you're transgressing a daraisa. And the Noda Behuda says in Kuf Mem Aleph that it's perfectly okay to do a sale. The Sfeich Hemed writes this. The Avnei Nezer talks about it's better, if you're getting rid of the property as well, it's better to rent it off rather than sell it off. There are complications, of course, if you're selling your kelim, because when you buy kelim back from a Gentile, you have to tovel them in a mikveh. But the bottom line with a chasam sofer is that even if everybody knows that you're going to buy that chometz back, it doesn't matter. There are no preconditions. The non-Jew can sell it, he can eat it, he can do what he likes with it, and he says you can even sell your animals. The thing that the Bechor Shaul was worried about, he says, you can just reflect upon it in the resale price. When you buy your animals back, because the animals may have an enhanced value, because they have been fattened up, then you can pay more to the Gentile when you buy the animals.
Well,
and, yeah?
You said the guy can sell it on. What happens if he does sell it on?
That's his choice. It belongs to him.
You won't get it back.
So then you won't get it back.
Well, right. You've got to deliver the goods.
Yeah.
In return for the money.
I thought he doesn't actually pay the full price.
Yes, the way it's done is that because it's costing a lot of money, he pays a deposit. And he owes the money. If the non-Jew just sells it on, it's his to sell on, and you can probably make a profit out of it, but then he has to pay the bill.
Yeah, right.
That's all. It's a halal in a way.
He's got the whiskey, it's probably at a discounted price.
Yes.
He sold it to a third party. He said, I've got 200 bottles of whiskey here, and £10 a bottle here.
Yeah.
And he makes a good...
He could do very well out of it, but he'll have to pay capital gains tax.
So actually, he can do that quite easily, but he's probably scared to. That's what I don't understand. He won't sell it on to anybody.
Why shouldn't he?
He won't.
He can't.
He's scared.
He'll lose his job.
He
all right, so he'll lose his job as a caretaker. But if you're selling a whole whiskey warehouse, it might be worth his while.
I mean, what I'm trying to say is, how much
any valid sale, and it is a valid sale, enables the Gentile to do whatever he wants. This is not what my mother in German used to call a Schwindelhetter. It is perfectly valid. And the guy can sell it on. But he's then got to pay for what he's taken.
And
if he hasn't...
And if he puts down £300,000, he's got £3,000 worth of whiskey, that guy's lost out.
Well, he may have to get a bank loan, and the bank might not be willing to sell to a caretaker of a shul whose income is very, very low. But that's another point. The point is that it is perfectly okay for the Gentile to sell on the chometz that he buys Pesach. There are no preconditions and there's no preclusions from doing that whatsoever.
And isn't that why in our shul we have a proper form? Proper form that everyone's being encouraged to use with, where you fill it in properly, not just sign one today, I sell everything.
Yeah, the Rav makes it sure that it's legal according to the law of the land.
Yeah.
That's right. And he does a number of kinyonim, not just one kind of kinyon. There's a variety. And he does as many as possible. There are some who are machmir and have a custom to have what's called an orev kablon, to be a guarantor that if the Gentile can't pay up, then somebody else will pay up. I know the Chabadniks have a custom like this, to have an orev kablon. But it's not the generally held view to have to do such a thing. But
the wrong thing to go to Ashwin after Yom Tov and say, look, I'll give you a better price than Rabbi Cohen. Yeah.
You can do. Yeah, you can offer the guy a better price, but it's up to him to decide who to sell to. But the attitude of the Chasam Sofer is, I want out. You see, we had this problem. What if the guy hasn't got the right kavona? He thinks it's all a big joke. Is it therefore a valid sale? The attitude of the Chasam Sofer is, number one, the first thing you are doing is, I want it out. It's a mental thing in your capacity, saying, I just don't want this chomet. I've done a bittul, I'm doing a mechira, I want it out. And that is the main thing. And then there's another thing, and there is an issue in Shas called Devarim Shebelev Einom Devarim. What the non-Jew is thinking in his mind doesn't really matter, because what he's thinking in his mind is not the crucial factor. If he signs that contract, it is legally valid.
In other words, he doesn't need kavana for it.
Even if he hasn't got the kavana,
yeah,
it's like then a din of hefka. It's as if, because what you did was in your mind, you said it's not mine anymore. So if the non-Jew thinks that he's not acquiring it, then what you've done is you've mafkir it. You've made it ownerless. And the premises in which it's rented out or sold is then ownerless. So it's hefka b'shus hefka. Well, you can't get any better than hefka b'shus hefka. It's no worse than a bittul in the kol chamira. Yes?
If in your mind you've rented it, it's not going to be hefka.
Pardon? Yeah, that's right. It's a belt and braces job. That's the attitude of many acharonim. That you're doing a bittul in any case.
Just one other question. There's something about this. As if somebody went to Ashwin after the bittul symbol, he paid for it.
Yes.
Or the comment, and he says no. Will that actually retroactively prove that the sale hadn't been a real...
I didn't follow. That he paid 50%.
After the payment, after 50% of what he paid for all the comment.
Yes.
And then he doesn't know, and then he sells it back, he doesn't sell nothing. Does that retroactively prove that the sale hasn't worked? Hasn't been...
He sells it back for nothing, but
he finishes off the transaction right back off.
Yes.
As he would have done. Even though he's got a much better offer away from that.
Right.
Will that retroactively prove that the sale hasn't been valid?
No, if somebody comes along and wants to gazump, you mean? Yeah, somebody else comes along and offers a better price. And
there's no pre-deal with Rabbi Cohen anyway.
And there's no pre-deal. So you can turn around to Rabbi Cohen and say, look, I'm very sorry. I've decided to sell it to somebody else. Here is the money that I owe you. Supposing he doesn't what?
Say he doesn't do that for Rabbi Cohen.
Yeah.
I've said back to him, that I've got a much better offer.
Yes.
Doesn't that prove the sale
was
a real sale?
No, because when I bought my house, I had a very decent and honest estate agent who said to me, look, we've agreed a price. We've agreed a price. My client is one who doesn't want to mess around. If somebody else comes along and offers a higher price, it's still yours. And that was, Baruch Hashem, that was how I managed to...
50% profit.
Yeah, but it's the choice. It's the choice of the person who is selling. He might want to have a reason why he's selling to one person rather than another person. Even if he's getting a lower price, that does not invalidate it. That does not make it look insincere. He may have an ulterior motive because he wants to be on good terms with Rabbi Kahn. So therefore he's selling back at a lower price. But that does not make it legally invalid. It's still halakhically okay.
That has nothing to do with what you said before, which is that he might want to have a good life.
Yeah, you're right. That's right. As the customs service says, it's not so crucial as to what the non-Jew has in his mind. It's important what you've got in your mind. Because at very least, if it's not a sale, it's a hefker. Because you've got rid of it in your mind.
How can it be hefker if you're doing a rental agreement?
Yeah, because even if it's...
Can't make something that you're renting out hefker. Because you can't rent it, that's hefker.
Yes, but...
You own it to rent it.
Yes, but if you've done a rental to the guy, and in his mind, it's not a valid contract, then you've still got it out of your mind. There can be a hefkerus there as well, by saying, it's not my premises for the next 10 days. It's still the same idea. There's a lot on this subject of Rosh Shabbalevim Devarim. The Chasam Sefer quotes Chashan Mishpot, Kufbeis, Evan Oezer, Chelek Alef Kufzayin, and everybody agrees, and the Midrashmas Odom brings it down, that this is then a valid sale. And the Shavi Ve'esh says you can enforce it in court. He says you can sell on, like we've just discussed. And if even if the non-Jew hasn't got the money, he might win the lottery, or he might get a loan, he can pay for it. And there's a chiddush of Reb Moshe Feinstein who says that even if a person is not such a frum yid, and he keeps his shop open on Chol HaMoed, and he is selling chometz, which was on the contract of sale to the guy, you might say, oh, it's a giloy das, that it's not then a valid sale. He says, no, it's simply that the one who is selling that chometz is stealing from the guy. It belongs to the non-Jew, and if a person then has his shop open and is selling from that chometz, he's guilty of theft. It's still a legal sale. And as far as your house insurance is concerned, well, it might invalidate your policy, but it won't invalidate the sale. And if the insurance do a payout, if there's chas v'shalom a flyer, then you've got an interesting question as to whom does the money belong to. It seems as though it will belong to the Gentile if the insurance pay out.
Why is it that when you sell your chometz, you don't get the money from the sale? In other words, I go to the rabbi and I say, I've got £100 worth of alcohol. Where's my money? If you give me a deposit, I'm selling to you. You're selling on. Where's my deposit?
Well, the rabbi is holding it for you. You're making the rabbi.
I want to see the money.
You want to see the money. Fine. Then if you want to see the money, you go and do it yourself directly to the guy, and you can make your own deal. But the reason why we do it through the Rav is because the Rav makes sure it's done kadosh v'chadin through all the kinyonim, etc. And you are appointing the Rav as your shaliach as though you are selling yourself. It's not that you're selling it to the Rav. The Rav is your shaliach. And we once discussed the idea of selling chometz just by email or by fax, which is perfectly okay because you're doing it simply by appointing a shliach. And you can appoint a shliach by email or fax. And it's the Rav who's going through all that, and he is holding a deposit on your behalf. So it's perfectly valid. And Rav Osner writes in Shevet Halevi, Chelek Dalet, Simen Mem Tef, that we do not paskin like the Bechor Shor at all. We go along like the Chasam Sofer. It's perfectly okay on a Daraisa, and there's no problem. So you might say, well, look, if you're doing a bittul in any case, what do I need to sell for? And Dan Weiss addresses this question in the Minchas Yitzchok in Chelek Ches Simen Mem Aleph. He says there are a couple of reasons why doing a bittul on its own is not really good enough. Number one, we rely on you having a Lev Sholem. You have to have complete kavona when you are doing your bittul ba'alma. And if a person owns a whiskey warehouse, we can't trust him that he's doing it properly with the right kavona. And the second idea, he says, is that because we're familiar with chometz the whole year round, it's kosher the whole year round, therefore it's very easy to forget and one might not do it properly. And if you did not have the right kavona, then the mechira bites. And because the mechira, you might be listing your chometz to the Rav, but there is an underlying transaction saying that I'm selling all chometz in my possession, so that you've got this fallback clause. And there's an interesting Rav Gestetner in the Laharis Nosan. He writes in Chelek Vav Simen Chafei that one should sell one's chometz. It's not simply saying, I'm not going to rely on this heter. He says, you should go out of your way to sell. I once knew a Rav Shimon Weiserschlitter, who didn't have chometz to sell, but he still went in for a shtar mechira. Why? Because it's a belt and braces job. That certain people might not do their bedikas chometz properly. There are nooks and crannies, especially in Kalim, where chometz might be hidden and you don't know about it. And some hold that Isur Bayir Bayir Motzei can even be on small amounts. And therefore, by selling chometz as well, you are covering yourself. And so he writes, the Imkein Motzini Yisod Godol is a fundamental rule, Shekol Ish Yimko Chem Salakum, that everyone should do a sale of chometz. There's an interesting Nitzei Gavriel who brings down in a sefer of his, it's in Hilchas Shmita where he brings it down, where he talks about Prusbel, and he talks about Mechiras Chometz, quoting the Ritvaz. And the Ritvaz, Rav Yaakov David of France, says that there are people who talk about the selling of Chometz as they're laughing at it. They say it's a cop-out. And he says these people are kofrim, and unfortunately there are people even amongst ourselves from a Yidden who laugh about the fact that people are selling chometz. He says nothing could be further from the truth. He says when you are selling your chometz, you are doing a chumrah. It's not a heter. It's not a cop-out. It's not that it's a legal fiction. It's not that it's a haromo. It's not that it's called a device. He says it's a chumrah. You're going more stringent. You're doing your kol chamira, you say all my chometz is hefka, fine. But because you're doing this belt and braces job, because you want to make sure that you're not committing any issa whatsoever, Am Yisrael Kadoshim Hain. We want to avoid any form of shadow of an issa. And therefore, the Jewish people are praised for wanting to do this. It's not a chumrah, it's not a kula, it's a chumrah. Alright, you're still going to do your bittul, you're going to do your bedikah anyway. But what started off, which appeared like what might be a feeble heter, is really a chumrah. Now I know that any anti-Semites might come along when they hear all this and they say, oh well, the Jewish people are devious, they always find a way out, they know how to cheat others, they try this on. They also, these anti-Semites will say, you rabbis, you want to find a way out of something, you find it. This is all a load of nonsense. First of all, we have very strict halachic guidelines. There are parameters in halacha. When can you do something, when can't you do something? A sale is a valid sale. It can be enforced in the court. There is nothing devious about it whatsoever. And all this business about you rabbis, there are certain kinds of sales which are criticized by Rabbonin. There's a very controversial thing about the sale of Eretz Yisrael in Shemitah year and whether it's legally valid and so on, without going down that path. Now, there are lots of transactions which can be called into question. And Haroma has its clear parameters in Halacha. Any Jew hater who wants to find an excuse to accuse us might do so. But once you go into the clear-cut sources and the poskim about it, it's clear-cut that it's perfectly valid. And there's an interesting idea brought by Rav Daniel Feldman, who says that when you sell your chometz, there's a kind of tikkun here, because you're doing a business transaction with a Gentile, and during Pesach, when you find any chometz which has been sold, you will have in your mind that it doesn't belong to you and that you are stealing if you eat it. And if you are stealing, that will be an additional incentive to you to keep well away from it. And by not stealing from non-Jews, that is for ourselves a tikkun to bring along the gula of Amirin Yorin. And by bringing along the gula, we will be zoche to be eating from the zochim in Atzochim. Yes, Gershon.
What happens? How can you do that? It's not yours.
Yeah, but you want to have a precaution that you won't forget yourself, or your children won't forget themselves when they see it and they'll come to eat it. It's hefker anyway, but in order to create, because you did a bittul. Oh, if it's sold, you mean? No, if it's sold, you can't burn it. It's not yours. But if you were mafkir it and you had in mind that this was not definitely included in the sale, or your sale didn't include, I sell all comics in my possession, then you will leave it. It's sold.
I think the Shlomo here does say even comics that's not listed and not known to the owner.
Well, then we will have to assume that when the Shulchan Aruch says you will burn the chometz in your possession, it only relates to chometz which was not sold. It's not yours otherwise.
In practical terms, you shouldn't burn it then.
That's right. In practical terms, you won't burn it. You'll put it away in a locked cupboard which has a skull and bones drawn on it. Danger, high voltage, do not touch. It doesn't belong to us. Full stop. Anyway, so that's the bottom line. Your chometz sale is valid. But if we got a few more minutes, let's just take this subject of alleged deviousness and bring it into the subject of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. I did promise the children that you'll get some questions to ask at Seder night. And the question which you can ask at Seder night is, why did we have to cheat the Egyptians in the way we did? How did we cheat them? Because we're talking now about cheating or deviousness. Derech Shaloshis Yomim Nelech Bamidbar. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Paro, we will go for 3 days to the wilderness. So don't worry, we're coming back soon. We just want to go on. We got a festival. We want to go for 3 days in the Midbar. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to talk like this? Can't he just be Everstick? Say the truth. We want to go. We got Eretz Yisrael promised to us by our forefathers already. We're going. We've had enough of you lot. We don't need you Egyptians. We're going. So why do we have to play devious? Why do we have to play like the word ha'aromo? Ha'aromo related to, Yaakov Avinu said, Loma Rimi Soni, why did you cheat me? Phonetically related. He gave Leah instead of Rochel. Why did you cheat me? We know that Lavan cheated Yaakov many times, Aseres Monim 100 times. But here we've got a case where Moshe Rabbeinu is playing a part. All right, you can say, just the day before the Six-Day War in 1967, what did the Israelis do? They published pictures in all the newspapers on the front page of Israeli soldiers basking in the sunshine on the beaches, taking it easy. There's no risk anymore. Everything's sorted out. The Egyptians are not going to start fighting with us. And the whole thing was a ploy. It was a brilliant bit of psychological warfare. The day later, the whole Egyptian Air Force was wiped out within 3 hours. So you could say, yeah, well, it was to save our lives. You know, there's a war going on. We have to fight the enemy. And it's a question of survival. All right, but Moshe Rabbeinu, does he really need to do that, to behave this way? And then there's another question. Before we had the Machas Becharos, Hashem says, Daber Ba'ozneh Om, speak in the ears of people, Yish'alu, they should borrow from the Egyptians their silver and their gold, their possessions, their outfits, their expensive designer label wear. They should go and borrow it. All right, the Rashbam says it doesn't really mean borrow the yeshilu. The yeshilu can mean and they will ask for. But most of the Mefarshim agree this was to borrow. And this is also a kind of deception. Well, if Jews are emistic and we stick by the truth, then why do we have to play deception? All right, you could say we deserved money for our wages. You know, we worked so hard for so many, many years for the Egyptians. We never got any pay for it, not even the minimum wage. So why shouldn't we get it? Yes, true. But, nevertheless, why do we have to behave in this way, in a way which sounds devious? So then the Gaon says, oh, well, the Egyptians were getting a taste of their own medicine. And the Kli Yochas says we had to fulfill a promise to Avraham Avinu, Gemara Brochas, Staff Tes, Yetzer Bruchosh Godel, that we're going to come out with lots of riches. And there are Jews who didn't want to do all this borrowing. They said, what do we need to schlep for? We've got a limit on our overweight luggage, you know, when we check in. And there were reluctance, but Hashem told Moshe to tell the Jews to actually ask for things. And in fact, many years later, in Gemara Sanhedrin Tzadi Aleph, it talks about Alexander the Great had a tribunal where there was a claim by Egyptians that we had to give back all this silver and gold because we only borrowed it. And there was someone called Gavil Ben Pasis who argued our case that we didn't get any remuneration for our work, and he won the argument. Fine. But why did we have to behave deviously? So the Som Derech of Rav Simcha Sissel Brody brings down the Arachayim HaKadosh. And he says, we were tricked into doing slavery. At first they invited us with a smile. They said, come, let's do some work together. And they worked with us. And they behaved all nicely with smiles and with charm. And then suddenly they dropped us into it. And they went off. And we had to be doing hard work. And they were whipping us. The Levium didn't fall for this. The Levium never had to be slaves. They could see through it. But the whole thing was trickery, and Hashem punishes midah keneged midah. In the way the evil people behave, Hashem treats them back. And there's an important idea in the divine plan of midah keneged midah. But there's something much more than this as the Arachayim HaKadosh. There's something amazing. He says, when we were leaving Mitzrayim, the attitude of the Egyptians was, oh, let them go already. You know, they've given us so much sorrows with all these muckers. What do we need these Jews for? Let them go. And it's B'shalach Parosom. Paro sends us out. Only afterwards it's Kibarachom that they fled. But he says, Hashem was manipulating the Egyptians in his midah keneged midah. They had tricked us. But Hashem wanted to do one of the biggest nace of Kriyas Yamsuf. Now how is he going to achieve Kriyas Yamsuf without the Egyptians chasing us? They're glad to get rid of us, but Hashem wanted to give us our emunah, something to teach us for all generations, our faith, and there was something, a price to be paid to the Egyptians, a punishment for what they had done to us. So they had to chase us. So how is he going to get them to chase us? Because of money. That's what it always boils down to. Yeah, we had the muckers. Let the Jews stop being slaves. But we want to get our money back. They've got all our silver and gold. They said that they were borrowing it. Aha, we have to chase them. And Rashi even brings this out. Rashi brings this out in the Shalach Yudalad Posik Vov. Not Lumamanenu, the Shilachnu. They took our money and we sent them out. How stupid we are. We need to get our money back. All right, let the Jews go, but let's go and get back our money. So that's why they chased after them. And that was part of the divine plan, leading to Kriyas Yamsuf, the greatest nace of all time. So you can, I'm giving you an answer, but you can still ask these questions on Seder night, because you might think of other answers, and your daddies might think of better answers than the ones I've given. So may everybody have a really enjoyable Pesach, and may we soon eat. Min hazvachim, min hapsochim, mishal hachag, kosher v'sameach. Yes, you have a question.
What happens if the goy were to die during Pesach? Does that invalidate the sale?
No, his Yerushim inherit the assets. It's a matter of inheritance.
Transfer back. There wouldn't be a delay between the end of
Pesach
and taking back.
Rabbi Cohen would have to go to the son of the Gentile and negotiate with him if he wants to buy it back. But it's just like in any other market transaction where the rules of inheritance apply.
Yeah, but that could take some time to actually be complete.
Yes, indeed.
So, when you said before, you have to wait for the rabbi to give a particular time.
Definitely.
It could be that at a certain time.
Yeah, well, that's right.
We have to make a Misha Berach. We have to make a Misha Berach.
Yes. Yeah. That's right, Henry. We make a Misha Berach for the health of the Gentile. But if the Gentiles does die, then an email has to go out to the whole community and say, hold it, don't eat your chametz. Don't eat the chametz, not your chametz. It doesn't belong to you yet. I've still got to negotiate with the son of the Gentile. Yeah. And it gets problematic if this son is over in Australia.
You don't know if the son is the inheritor. It could be
a probate.
Indeed. I don't think there's any way out of that. Yes, it's a valid sale, and if the guy dies, then you have to do what has to be done according to the law of the land. All right, Milsa de la Shchicha. Shall I just tell you one more thing? I'll just tell you one more thing. In the 3 weeks, we don't say Shechionu, right? In the three weeks, the minhag is not to say Shechionu on a new fruit or new clothing. But we do say Shechionu on Shabbos in the 3 weeks. Why? So the Taz says, we're worried that over a period of 3 weeks, Shemayomus, a person might die. But less than a week, we'd say it on Shabbos, less than a week, we don't say Shemayomus. A person won't die within a week. You'll buy it back from the guy in a week. Thank you.